Poblacht na hÉireann, the provisional government of the Irish Republic to the people of Ireland. Irish men and Irish women, in the name of God and of the dead generations from which she receives her old tradition of nationhood, Ireland, through us, summons her children to her flag and strikes for her freedom. Having organised and trained her manhood through her secret revolutionary organisation, the Irish Republic of Brotherhood, and through her own military organisations, the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizen Army have patiently perfected her discipline, having resolutely waited for the right moment to reveal itself. She now seizes that moment and, supported by her exiled children in America and by gallant allies in Europe, but relying in the first on her own strength, she strikes in full confidence of victory. We declare the right of the people of Ireland to the ownership of Ireland and to the unfettered control of Irish destinies to be sovereign and indefeasible. The long usurpation of that right by a foreign people and government has not extinguished the right, nor can it ever be extinguished, except by the destruction of the Irish people. In every generation, the Irish people have asserted their right to national freedom and sovereignty. 6 times during the past 300 years, they have asserted it in arms. Standing on that fundamental right, and again asserting it in arms in the face of the world, we hereby proclaim the Irish Republic as a sovereign independent state, and we pledge our lives and the lives of our comrades in arms to the cause of its freedom, of its welfare, and of its exaltation among the nations. The Irish Republic is entitled to, and hereby claims, the allegiance of every Irish man and Irish woman. The Republic guarantees religious and civil liberty, equal rights and equal opportunities to all its citizens, and declares its resolve to pursue the happiness and prosperity of the whole nation and of all its parts, cherishing all the children of the nation equally and oblivious of the differences carefully fostered by an alien government which have divided a minority from the majority in the past. Until our arms have brought the opportune moment for the establishment of a permanent national government, representatives of the whole people of Ireland, and elected by the suffrages of all her men and women, the provisional government hereby constituted will administer the civil and military affairs of the Republic in trust for the people. We place the cause of the Irish Republic under the protection of the Most High God, whose blessing we invoke upon our arms, and we pray that no one who serves that cause will dishonour it by cowardice, inhumanity or rapine. In this supreme hour, the Irish nation must, by its valour and discipline, and by the readiness of its children to sacrifice themselves for the common good, prove itself worthy of the august destiny to which it is called. Signed on behalf of the Provisional Government, James Connolly, Thomas J. Clark, Joseph Plunkett, Sean McDermott, Thomas McDonough, P.H. Pearce, Eamon Cant.
And you've just been listening to the voice of Joe McGinley reciting the 1916 proclamation that was read out by Pádraic Pearce on that fateful Easter Monday. And Joe is in the studio with us at the moment. That was a great reading, Joe. Joe has a connection with the 1916 Rising because his father, Liam, was in the GPO garrison, and his uncle Paddy, I believe, was across the road in Clearys. Tell me about, when did you first become aware out in West Cabra growing up that you had such a strong Republican link to the 1916 Rising?
Well, as growing up, I wasn't aware of it hardly at all, because I felt that everybody else's home was the same as my own home growing up, you know. There was nothing exceptional about it. It was only when I got older. I remember now my father, every Easter, they used to have a question time on Radio Éireann with Joe Linnane. And Easter, they had a competition for the 1916 men. And I remember the first time he went up, he won it. And the second year, he got second.
Thursday.
It's a sort of an X factor for it was 1916.
Yeah.
And what did he have to do? Did he tell a story, recite something, or just...
No, the question time.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was a question. It was general knowledge questions, basically. Yeah, you got 2 mark questions, 2 4 mark questions, 2 6 mark questions.
And would this be all about the 1916 rebellion?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not about Ireland, history, places like that. I remember my father was asked where was Regnans Tower. He didn't know where it was. He said he never heard of it, but he kind of discovered afterwards down in Waterford.
Yes, I know it well. It's across from the Tower Hotel in Regnans. Yeah.
Well, he lost it over that question.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, next time you're down in Waterford, go to the hotel. It's right across the road.
I'll be down at the Tower. Yeah.
Oh, have you? Yeah. If you didn't realise that specifically your father was involved, did you have a very Republican upbringing? Well, like, was there things that went on in your house or things were spoken about that were different than other people's?
Little things were back to me. I remember once, lovely summer evening, and the proms were on the BBC, and they were playing Land of Hope and Glory and all this. And I was out in the back, my father was out in the back garden, and the community says, that's not going to be played in this house. I don't know.
So there was something, there was an undercurrent there that you didn't really realise.
All the time, yeah.
And why would you have felt that your father didn't specifically speak about the GPO garrison and what happened? Like, surely at that stage, it was something to stick the chest out about and make sure that everybody knew. Or was he just such a private and such a shy or such a responding man?
I think they took it for granted that they were just acting according to their natural abilities at the time. They were his father was from Donegal, and his father was in the Fenians, and they were all rare to be very Republican family.
And your grandfather's name was
Paddy.
Okay,
so Patrick McKinley, from Ballyshannon in County Donegal.
Okay, so there was a Fenian tradition in your family coming down the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like the 1916 commemorations, as they happened while you were a young boy, did your father bring you into the military marches that were going on in Dublin, in O'Connell Street, for the 1916 rebellions?
Well, he usually took part in them. You know, he was marching. I remember him marching the day, say for instance, the date might be a weekday. They'd all meet and they'd march down Westmoreland Street, down to the GPO. They got smaller and smaller as the years went by.
Yeah.
There might be only, at the end of it, maybe about 15 or 20 of them, you know.
And was this because they were dying off?
Dying off, yeah.
That reminds me, it's a line from that song, and year after year, the numbers got fewer.
That's the...
Someday no one will march there at all. It's from...
The band's played Waltzing Matilda.
That's the one,
yeah.
So that reminds me a little
bit. But I remember that my father, he was in Belfast jail as well, and he spoke more about that, I'd say, than anything else. Not so much more than, but... When he was in Belfast jail...
Yeah, just for the listeners, he was incarcerated in Knutsford jail immediately after the rising.
The fighting, he was released back to Dublin.
Okay.
All the 1960 men were released back to Dublin, but they kept on to fight. You know, they were working, they still were Republicans, and they wanted...
Yeah, because the War of Independence was coming.
Yes, that's right. They wanted England out of Ireland. So he was arrested and he was brought up to Belfast, a few of them.
So that's the second time. He was released from Knutsford's jail in the general amnesty, brought back to Dublin, started carrying on what he was started in 1916, and then he was lifted again and brought to Belfast.
That's right.
Now, you have a letter from that, but from his time in Belfast jail.
Yeah.
Do you want to read a little bit for us, for our listeners?
The things about me about Belfast jail was, you remember telling me that the IRA leaders in Belfast jail, they were allowed to have a meeting once a week.
Okay.
In one of the cells, and they used to talk in Irish, so that there was an RU seaman at the door keeping watch, so they always spoke in Irish to make sure that they wouldn't be understood. And he was telling me this night their meeting was on, and a different man on the door, different RU seaman on the door, and when the half hour was up, he said to them, "Ta and Tom Suis."
So he was able to speak Irish.
Able to speak Irish.
Oh God! Well, they should have sussed that one out.
They couldn't go over that. Ernest Blythe was in it. Was with him up there at the time. Ernest Blythe, well-known man afterwards, and my father went against the treaty. His brother went with the treaty.
This is Paddy, who was in the clinic.
Paddy, he went with the treaty.
Now, there's a typical Irish story: one brother against brother.
That's right.
And I suppose, in a general question, did they ever make it up down through the years?
They said they did. my brother said he felt they didn't. I felt it. I never saw any animosity at all between them. Because I remember when I was received my first Holy Communion, my father brought, he lived in Holt. He was quartermaster or over the ships coming, the boats coming in Holt. He lived there, down the pier. Mm-hmm. And I remember, the thing I remember going out to Holt was going out in a tram from Dublin, and they'd all gone shortly afterwards. So I remember waking up in his house the next morning, and...
This is Uncle Paddy?
Uncle Paddy, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I looked out the bedroom window, and the sea was coming up practically to the window, up the roof of the house. Yeah, it was a great experience. Another thing was, my mother used to speak a lot about them. Like she told me, I've written about it there, one evening... Yeah, my father met her. They weren't married at the time.
Right.
If you like, I'll read it out. Read it
and
out.
Your mother's, yeah. Your mother's name was?
Molly, Mary. This is now Devonir and Lincoln Jail, 1918. One evening, my father, Liam McGinley, met my mother. They weren't married at the time. He said to her, "Molly, the boys, meaning the IRA, want you to do a special job tomorrow evening. You are to go into a certain pub tomorrow evening in Talbot Street, also mentioning the time at which he was to go there. There will be four men standing at the bar having a drink and a chat. There will be an attaché case at their feet. You are to speak to nobody. You are to take the case and walk down to the north wall and onto the boat there. At that time people could board such a boat to see someone off or whatever. There will be four men standing at the top of the gangplank having a chat. You are not to speak to them. You are just to leave the attaché case at their feet and walk back down the gangplank. There will be no need for you to feel afraid. The boys will be watching you all the time to make sure you are all right." When she came down from the boat, my father met her and said to her, "That was a great job you did there, Molly." In the case, there was a rope to get Dev out of Lincoln Jail. Two of the men standing on the boat were Michael Collins and Harry Boland. They didn't use the rope ladder to help Dev to escape. Instead, they used a key, which they thought was more reliable. Their bringing the rope with them is mentioned in the official autobiography of Devonir, written in collaboration with Lord Longford and T.P. O'Neill.
And that was, I suppose, an inkling to tell you that your mother was open to Republican type of activities.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was in Cumann na mBan.
Are you very proud of the fact that you're...
Now I am. Very right. Proud. Yeah, absolutely, okay. Yeah.
And as we approach Easter Monday, I think it's... we're
4 years' time.
4 years' time will be 100 years, so we're 96 years away from it. Yeah. You've got to stick around for the 100 years.
Am I?
You are certainly going to stick around, because you're not getting away with this one. So listen, if you've just joined us here in the studio in Near FM on this Easter Monday, we have Joe McGinley in studio talking about his father, Liam McGinley, who was in the GPO garrison as the 1916 rebellion broke out. And I'm just going to read a deposition. You've done an awful lot of research and work just to actually verify that everything is in accordance with what your father said, because I suppose there is a general maybe a perception, like everything else, that all the people who say they were in the GPO garrison, if they put all the names together, they probably would fill O'Connell Street a couple of times over.
Yes.
But I'm going to read a little bit of an extract from a deposition by a man called John J. Dial from 48 Cabra Drive, North Circular Road, Dublin. And this is part of the military archives of the Defence Forces of Ireland. And I'm turning to page 8, where John Dial is talking about an activity that was going on around the GPO, and I'm just going to read from it. "After our party had entered the GPO, another party came along. Our people in Cleary's opened fire on them as they mistook them. All escaped injury except Lee McGinley, who received shrapnel injuries." Now, that's given details of one mistaking the other for the enemy and opening fire. And there's a quirk in this, that in the Cleary's garrison, Liam's brother Paddy was there. So Paddy was having a pop at Liam even that early. But he didn't know.
Yeah.
And did that incident ever come up in conversation?
No, that's the first time I heard of that. Well, my mother told me he was injured in the hand.
Right.
Yeah.
But he didn't. It wasn't mentioned that Paddy was there.
No, it wasn't.
No. Okay, it wasn't mentioned in a jocular sort of thing. As things developed later on and the anti-treaty thing and pro-treaty thing came along, it was never said like, you had your chance and you didn't take it.
No, I never heard anything like that.
Well, let's maybe hope that they would have talked about it in that type of thing, because both of them had Ireland's freedom in their hearts, you know.
Yeah.
So just getting back to the Belfast jail and the RUC men speaking Irish and overhearing what they were talking about.
Yeah.
You have a letter written by your father from Belfast jail to your mother, is it?
No, to his younger sister.
For her 16th birthday. So you're going to read it out.
It's William McGinley, Belfast prison. You see, he calls himself William there and he signs off with Liam. It's something I quite don't understand. He liked Liam the most, I know that. Now, William McGinley, Belfast prison, Saturday the 8th of June, 1918. Eileen Yeelish, I enclose a card bearing my wishes on your birthday, that God's blessings may be with you, to strengthen you against evils and assist you in the battle of life. May you see many a happy birthday. I hope to hear from you soon. Let me know, did you pass your exam in music? Also, what concerts you have been on lately. I noticed in the papers you were to be at one in the Mansion House. Let me know how things went at it. You will be pleased to know that I am keeping quite well. I am making a little progress headway with Irish, but of course slowly. I hope you also are learning the language, and we'll be able to have conversations in it when I come home. Mr. Paul's friend calls to the prison every week with food, and I have only seen something else. I've only seen her once. Strange not to visit me. Of course, Miss Something Something comes to me twice a week. Time is going slowly and I have a third of my sentence compounded. I did a quickler story, can't make it out. I have a third of my sentence compounded. It won't be long, please God.
Probably completed.
Until I am back at home. More missing. I have no more to say at present. Be a good girl, attend your school regularly. Be obedient to mother, and remember, quarrel with none, as life is too short for that. Give my love to all at home, and accept some for yourself. It's Misha Dugrahar, with love, Le Gra Agus Pogana, Liam.
Love and kisses, lovely.
Yeah.
Love and kisses.
Yeah.
Strange to just hear that he was learning Irish as an adult. Why was that?
Well, you see, he was right in Scotland, and his father was a tailor. And he went over to Scotland and to work as a tailor. There was more work over there, seemingly.
Mm.
And he went there. And he was educated in the Marist Brothers in Glasgow. Now, I don't know what year he came back to Dublin. When he came back then, he had no Irish, you see. He didn't learn any Irish over there.
News, views, arts and culture. 24 hours a day.
Community radio for North East Dublin. 90.3. Near FM.
And you've just been listening to myself talking to Joe McGinley, whose father, Liam McGinley, took part in the 1916 rebellion. He was in the GPO garrison. And Joe, could you tell us exactly, like, what was he part of? Like, IRB, IRA, exactly what did he belong to?
Well, the IRB was a result of defeat. They were formerly the Fenians.
Right.
And then they were, I don't know how they originally came together, but here's about how it worked. It was it's a secret organisation.
Right.
And this will tell you how secretive it was. Irish Republican Brotherhood, or IRB. My father, Liam McGinley, was a member of F Company, 2nd Battalion, Old IRA, in the GPO garrison in the 1916 Rising. He was also a member of the IRB, as was his brother Paddy, who also took part in the Rising. Paddy fought in Cleary's store, which was facing the GPO. My father told me that to join the IRB, a new member had to be proposed by a current member of the IRB. If a member thought that someone he knew would like to be in the IRB, he would surreptitiously ask him if he would like to be a member of the IRB, not saying that he was the member himself. If he got a reply in the affirmative, he would put his name forward at his own cell meeting. There were IRB cells all over Ireland, And a proposed member's name went to every cell throughout the country to know if anyone knew anything about him as to why he should not be admitted to the organisation. If anyone throughout the country knew of any reason as to why he should not be admitted, then he wasn't admitted. To show how secretive the IRB was, my father's brother Paddy was in the IRB, but my father never knew it. On the evening that my father was going to his first IRB meeting to his cell in the IRB, he was at home getting ready for the meeting. He noticed that Paddy was getting ready to go out too. My father thought he was going out to meet his girlfriend. When my father got to the meeting, he saw his brother Paddy there before him. He couldn't believe it. He said to Paddy, "What are you doing here?" Paddy laughed and said, "What are you doing here?" Paddy knew my father was going to the meeting, but he gave no indication to my father that he knew, nor did he ever let my father know that his name had been proposed for membership at his cell meeting. Paddy didn't propose my father's name for membership of the IRB, because by doing so, he would be letting my father know that he, Paddy, was himself a member of that organisation. The Irish Republican Brotherhood was popularly named the Fenians before the Irish Volunteers was formed by Professor of Gaelic Owen McNeill at a meeting in the Rotunda in Parnell Square on the 25th of November 1913. My grandfather, my father's father, who was from Ballyshannon, County Donegal, was a member of the Fenians. Most of the leaders of the 1916 Rising were in the IRB. De Valera was not a member. All members on joining the IRB had to take a note of secrecy. De Valera refused to do this because it was a secret organisation. Among the 1916 leaders, those who were in the IRB were Padraig Pearse, Joseph Mary Plunkett, James Connolly, Thomas Clark, Sean McDermott, Thomas McDonough and Eamon Cant. Other 1916 leaders may have also been in the IRB and probably were. Michael Collins and Harry Boland were also in the IRB. I write this piece to show how secretive the IRB was. The reason why De Valera wasn't in it, because the Catholic Church didn't ban secret societies, and because of that, he didn't join the IRB.
So he held the Catholic Church's line in it. And didn't join as a secret
organisation. Because he was a Catholic, yeah.
It's a great insight, actually, to be sitting here talking to the son of a man who fought in the garrison in the 1916 Rising, the GPO garrison. And I suppose as we're coming to the end of this half an hour or so with Joe McGinley, we're leaving the best wine to last, because Joe has in his possession his father's medal, and he's going to show it here to us today. So you're going to hear a little bit of rummaging around in boxes as he opens it up, and he's going to show, because I've never seen a medal belong to anyone in the 1916 rebellion, so I'm really looking forward to it. The medal is in a little box.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry, there behind you. Just want to tell the listeners that it's in a lovely chocolate box.
Another thing you might like to know is, if you saw the film on Michael Collins,
yeah,
his best friend in the film was Harry Boland. Now Harry Boland was a tailor. And he had a shop in Abbey Street. I have his card here in front of me. H.J. Boland, Merchant Tailor, 64 Middle Abbey Street, Dublin. Telegrams, Boland, Middle Abbey Street, Dublin. Now, my father worked for Harry Boland.
I was just going to say that, because he was a tailor, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Very good.
So my father worked for Harry. He said they were great friends.
Okay.
And his brother Paddy worked for him too. 64, it's gone now. Anyway, 64 Middle Abbey Street. Okay. As far as I know, who's facing, I wouldn't be sure, I've looked it up one time, where the Arnott's, facing the Adelphi Cinema.
Okay.
Around that area.
Yeah, well, there is one of two of the original houses still there.
Well, it would be,
So maybe when I'm in town the coming weeks, I'm going to look it up and see if it's still there.
Yeah, 64.
Okay, so you have the medal.
Yeah.
You've rummaged it out of the box.
Yeah.
Let's give us a look at it and describe it to us.
I have two medals here. One is for 1916, and the other is for the War of Independence, the Black and Tan War.
Right.
So I have here his 1916 medal. There was two medals, actually, from 1916. One was to wear for parades, and the other was a smaller one, an exact replica of it.
Okay.
That you could wear in the lapel of your coat. The medal itself the front of it is beautiful. It's the very same statue as that's in Cúchulainn. Yeah, the death of Cúchulainn. That's on the medal. And the back of it is written, Seachtain na Cásca, 1916, Easter week, 1916. And it's the medal is green and orange.
Yeah, I can see it there. It's lovely.
The cloth on it. Yeah.
And did your father ever wear that lapel medal?
Never. Never.
He never wore
no,
it?
No, never, never. Okay. I don't suppose any of them did, really. And I have an armband here, Dan. It's the same. It's a lovely armband.
Green and gold.
Green and gold, and 1916 and gold. Blazoned on it. I can't think of the word. The Defence Forces signalled in.
That's now, absolutely beautiful.
Now, the black and tan medal is... It's on the front of it is EIRE, and there's four provinces in the corner of each little engraved. And there's an Irish volunteer standing to attention, and he's dressed as some of the photographs you see of the IRA, a trench coat on him and a rifle, standing to attention.
Yeah, now that looks like a more somber medal. That one looks a little bit more somber because, and it's actually black and tan. It's black and orange. As Joe hands it across to me here, I have it in my hand myself. This is gorgeous. I'm really cheered and proud to be holding this medal. Yes, air it to the front. And it, as I say, it looks like a more somber medal. I suppose the Black and Tan War probably was a more vicious war. Like the rebellion happened, and it happened over a short period of time, six days.
Yeah.
But the War of Independence starts in 1918 and finishes up with the treaty. So it's a 3-year war, maybe a little bit more. There are atrocities committed both sides, especially with the Black and Tans, the burning of Cork, for example. Okay, if you've just joined us here, we've just looked at the two medals belonged to Lee McGinley, who took part in the garrison, GPO garrison in 1916 and later went on to play his part in the Black and Tan War, the War of Independence. We have the two medals here. We have an armband, and they are proudly handed across to me by his son, Joe McGinley, who's sitting in studio with us today. Well, I hope, listeners, you've been enjoying the show. This is going to become part of our 100-year celebration of the 1916 Rising in due course. But just to give you an inkling, maybe a small snapshot, to have a man amongst us in the studio and who works here and contributes on a weekly basis to his own shows, Joe McGinley, very, very well-respected gentleman in the radio, to have him bring in his father's medals and tell his stories, read his cards and letters, has been an absolute privilege and a pleasure for me. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, and I suppose it's worth just taking the time out just to remember that men gave their lives for the freedom that we have today. Joe, thank you very much for coming in, and I hope you enjoyed going through it. You're obviously very proud of your connections, and I'm glad that we have the power here in Near FM to bring it out to the listeners of Dublin and Ireland on this Easter Monday. Thank you very much.
And it's the archives in the army have all the thing. I was very delighted to get what I got there the other day.
Yeah.
My father's main was officially mentioned as being in the GPO. And that
So you're cock of the walk.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Your 24-hour community station.
867 1190.
Near FM.